This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here on the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can listen live, stream anywhere live. You can also listen on demand with the Rewind feature. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company is each and every Monday. Of course, the team director and head coach of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL circuit. He's on Twitter, on X, at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Great day. Great weekend of sports.
Great weekend of sports. We also officially, in my opinion, have the beginning of Feast Week. The Tigers and UConn doing battle in the Maui Invitational. Herd, it's just really good to see the B-roll of Maui. It's kind of dark and gloomy outside. You're thinking about anywhere else you'd rather be. Maui is that warm blanket, and it's just good to see. It's good to see the Maui Invitational back in Lahaina, in the what appears to be the high school gym that we all know and love, with the super soft rims. I always just feel like more shots get made in Maui, and the shot clock with just the numbers on the shot clock. No game clock, nothing. The old school, like straight out of 1993 shot clocks. It just warms the heart, Herd.
No, for sure. I agree with you, Jeff. The thing is, if you're a true college basketball head, could I be wrong on this, Jeff? But before they start letting you do the exhibitions and some of the tournaments they do now the first week, the Maui used to feel like this when it officially just. I know they did PK 80 a few years ago, but Maui used to feel like
the beginning of college basketball.
Like the real thump. Yep. Now they do all these because I know like Houston and what's the name in Vegas right now, Alabama. Yep. All that went going on by 7-8 years ago, and Maui was always the place to be, and it's like, oh, it didn't start.
I totally agree. I had this rant last week when, listen, it's great to have meaningful college basketball, watching teams play that you care about. But last week, they were trying to brand it as Feast Week. And it's like, no, Feast Week begins 9:30 local time in Hawaii when the Maui Invitational kicks off. And then you've got Maui. Traditionally, we used to have the Old Spice Classic in the in the gym in Disney World that you know just smells like chlorine. Then you'd have the Great Alaskan Shootout at night. And then we started adding the Battle for Atlantis, which was fine. Nothing. That was when I felt like we started adding in college basketball played in ballrooms in somewhere at a resort in the Caribbean. But to me, this is when it all begins. And we got the Tigers and UConn. We'll be live reacting throughout the game. So we're in the first half right now. We're at the under 8 timeout. Right now, Memphis leads 27-24. And we'll get Herd's thoughts throughout the game. But kind of quickly, because I don't know. I know you've been in transit, Herd, so I'm not sure how much you've seen. I think really the thing for me is Memphis's defensive intensity has very much given UConn problems. And I think they've done a pretty good job of continuing to drive and to get UConn into foul trouble. And quickly, Johnson gets two quick ones, like right off the bat. And UConn's definitely, you can tell, this is a step up in competition. Not that the two-time defending champions are afraid of competition, but I do think it's important to note they basically just played bye games against all teams in the 300s, and you can see this is a different level of intensity right now. And I mean, I guess the only concern is I feel like Memphis has greatly outplayed UConn so far, and you realize, like, okay, it's a three-point game because that's a pretty good team on the other side.
Yeah, same thing I was thinking, like, I'm not going to say Memphis gave their best swing.
Yep.
But I will say that it felt like it was getting to 8 or 9 and there's only 3 right now. But I do feel like if Memphis can have their next 5 minutes can be really strong, I think it will come down to the end because Memphis traditionally this year, I don't know if traditionally and this year goes together, but
it's been a trend so far. I'm totally where you're going.
Where I'm going. Yeah. They haven't really had good first halves and good starts, even from the first game in Missouri. So I believe in a second half. So if they can have a competitive first half, that's great. Now, another point you made, I was on the way here. I was talking to Leon in the car, and he was saying, oh, they ain't playing nobody. And I was kind of what you were saying. I was on both sides of it. Like, one, they haven't played nobody. But two, I don't think the defending champs really, you know, I don't think they need a tester.
The moment's not going to be too big for them. You know what I mean? Like, they're playing in big games. I don't know if the score overlay was wrong, but now we're showing tied up at 24. So rather than 27-24, it's 24-24. But to your point, this is kind of in my theory, and I don't know if I've tested it on you. So the first halves have been a thing so far for Memphis in which sluggish starts, and then they come out in the second halves, and they're averaging, it feels like, 50 points, and they're winning the second halves by basically double. It feels like the average score in the second half is like 50-27. So my theory so far has been because of how they guard you and they make you play for 40 minutes, maybe in the first half when they're not exactly hitting shots, but they're just kind of picking at you and they're wearing you down. And in the second half, what we see is eventually the defense leads to really easy offense and they just kind of break teams down. And that's kind of my working theory, but I don't know if it perfectly explains it, but to me it's like that's when they start to get into transition really quickly. They get a bunch of really easy shots, but it all starts, like, I'm not even necessarily sure it's that they're particularly bad in the first half. I think it's oftentimes they've been a little sloppy in first halves with turnovers, and that's helped other teams kind of build leads. But really what I think it is they just wear you down throughout the game.
Yeah, I my take on that would be I would say that they have had bad first halves because when you said sloppy, so I can't say all of them, but I was in the building in Missouri. And but maybe that first game, it was just a lot of unnecessary turnovers. Now, your other analogy, I'm dead on with it. The only thing that scares me about today, I think they're going to have to just have a solid, good showing the whole game. I don't think UConn ever go break down. They might get a couple of turnovers here and there, but like how they've been able to just put their will on people's second half, it breaks down, they in transition, they getting all kind of wide open threes, they having fun. I don't know because, you know, with me, Dan Hurley, a good friend of mine, but outside of that, his teams are so tough and disciplined that I'm not sure it's going to just be a bunch of turnovers at one spurt at any time.
To your point, I feel like, pardon my French, I feel like Memphis has guarded their asses off so far. Two turnovers. for UConn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, now some of it has been a little bit lucky. Like there've been some loose balls that bounces have gone UConn's way, and that could have led to some different turnovers and whatnot. But for the most part, this looks like a typical UConn team, that they're going to be incredibly disciplined. They're not going to beat themselves, and you're going to have to play incredibly well to beat them. And as we're seeing right now, now UConn takes a 3-point lead with 5.5 to go in the first half. And honestly, like, I don't feel like I feel like Memphis played pretty damn well. And that just shows to me, like, all right, this is a monster on the other end.
And Memphis getting respect too, then.
For sure.
I don't want to step out my lane, because this is your lane, what I'm about to say is, but somebody told me the bet was all the way down to 8 today. Wasn't it higher last week on my right?
So
it was.
Is that wrong?
No, I don't know.
It's kind of hard to predict what UConn lines are going to be, because a lot of times what you can do is you can go to these metrics and you'll see a predicted score. Okay. And the line's usually going to be pretty close to that. But the problem is, because UConn is such a popular bet, so many people will just, AKA, I have a betting system. It's called Is UConn Playing? And then I'll usually bet UConn. And because of that, there's now like a UConn tax where you tack on like 5 or 6 points. And so I think most of the projections I saw said this was around a 7-point game.
Okay, 7.
And the line ends up, I saw it around 9 this morning. So, but I mean, my first gut was it was going to be closer to 10, but I do think that that does give Memphis a little bit of respect of, hey, this is not just going to be a game where we're just tacking on 5 points for UConn, and whatever the power rating says, we're not just going to add a UConn tax of 5. I think it shows, hey, we know this situational spot, which is Memphis has played a much tougher schedule to start, and on top of that, this is going to be a game that tips off at 9:30 a.m. local time. Those usually kind of lend to sleepier starts. Although this game has not been that. This has been intense from the get-go. Like Hurley's already like in mid-season freakout form. We've already had a UConn Tech on the bench. Although I think they were very clear to say it was from an assistant, not from Hurley. But we've already had a UConn Tech in a timeout. We've already seen Hurley's not in coat and tie, so he doesn't have to like throw the coat off immediately. But he's ready to go. This, you can tell, this is a big game. He feels the intensity of the game too.
Yeah, if anybody was ever concerned, because you might see little tournaments around Memphis and don't know how high-level AAU look, this is similar to it. You have the collar shirts, you have the khakis.
Everybody's in the coach's polo, Nike dry-fit pants. Yeah.
And it's intense. You have these 5 stars against these 5 stars. 9:30 a.m. games, I'm very used to them, 8 a.m. games. So this is kind of in my field, and it's fun, and it is difficult getting kids up early, because people don't understand, and I don't want to make this technical for people, but people don't understand when you have a 8 and 9 and 10 a.m., people don't understand like what time you have to wake the kids up, organize breakfast. I know that sounds crazy and boring, but to have a early game is so much from a mental. It's so much stuff that goes on.
Well, then like, figuring out like how far is the bus ride? Like,
yeah,
you know, like
all
this,
that
like,
shooter.
Is there anything we could worry about? Traffic? Like, could we have all, like, what are there problems that could arise? Yeah.
And people don't even think about that, but that's what the type of things you have to think about. And Jeff, I don't want to start the show off too on fire, and I don't know if I'm saying the obvious, but I think this will be the biggest win of Penny Hardaway's career.
Okay, so what else could even qualify? Because right now UConn's, I think they're ranked second.
Second. And back-to-back defending champs.
I guess there is a question of, is a regular season win, despite over a top opponent on national TV in a big-time event, are regular season wins as big as tournament wins? I guess that would be the one question. But I'm with you. This feels like a bigger deal than even the Boise win would have felt like when they beat Boise in the first round.
Oh, man, it's bigger than that. Excuse me on that, Jeff. I get the tournament stuff. Beating UConn, back-to-back champs, and the Malu is a big deal. This bigger than
God,
that, boys.
Look how good it looks.
Ooh,
look how good it looks.
I ain't going to lie. We're not even here, Jeff, and we only been on here 10 minutes. And this is already my funnest show. We get to watch the University of Memphis. I mean, we feel like we're at the house today. I ain't know the TVs could turn this way, and this is enjoyable.
Oh man, this is the new world of like radio and of of media in which, like, people will watch along while other people are watching the same games. Like, I mean, it's part of, like, Barstool really, in my opinion, popularized it, like, where they started streaming games and watching people during big games for their teams. And then that developed into live streaming for them. And then, really, I think what brought it to the forefront was the Manning Cast, the watch along for the Monday night games. And then we started to see a few others. Like, I think it's a little bit, I think it lends itself more to, I think football's a better way to do it just because of the way the basketball games flow. And whereas football, it's like play, reaction, mm-hmm. whereas basketball is a little bit more continuous action. But I do think that's a new phenomenon, is that I think when the idea was first presented of, hey man, we want to like watch along while you watch the game and we're all watching the game. Originally, like, media executives would be like, why would you do that? It's like, well, it turns out most people like watching sports with their guys and their buddies, yeah, and their friends. Sure. Like, who, and so people enjoy that dynamic. And to me, like, that's something that has clearly gotten into play. All right, let's give a quick update. So right now, Memphis hit their last four shots. They've regained the lead 35-34. All right, tell me the numbers you care about. I'll give you the numbers because I got them in front of me. In terms of what do you want? Field goal. So Tigers are 11 of 19 so far, 58% from the floor. UConn 14 of 31 from the floor. That's 45%. Tigers are 5 of 8 from 3. So 63%. UConn 5 of 9 from 3. Tigers 8 of 12 from the free throw line, whereas UConn's only gotten to the line 3 times. They're just 1 of 3 from the line. 6 turnovers for Memphis, 2 for UConn. Also, kind of a number that matters. Memphis has only got 2 points off of the turnovers from UConn. 6 turnovers has led to 11 points for the Huskies. Defensive rebounds, Tigers lead the way 10-7. However, on the offensive side, UConn has gotten 8 boards to 3 for the Tigers, 7 second chance points for the Huskies compared to 2 for the Tigers. Bench scoring is 23-6, although I think that's a little misleading because Johnson picked up 2 quick fouls, like, within, I think, before even the first media timeout. And we also know, like, this Tiger team is largely, like, their scoring is largely coming from their starters. So that's not something that really concerns me a ton. UConn leads in points in the paint, 18-12. Tigers lead in fast break points. They've done a good job of getting misses and getting into transition. While it's not, like, been straight off of turnovers, they've done a good job with pace there. 14-4 fast break points, the advantage to the Tigers. 2 blocks each side, 1 steal each side. 8 assists for the Huskies, 5 for the Tigers. Tigers have led for 11 minutes and 27 seconds. UConn's led for 217. The game has been tied for 321. Largest lead for the Tigers has been 6, and the largest lead for the Huskies has been 5. And right now, currently, the Tigers lead by 1.
You know, first of all, great job, Jeff.
Thank you.
Not watching.
I read a lot of numbers.
Really good job. I don't know if I should be more confident by them numbers if I wasn't watching the game, or more scared, because some of the stuff that, from what you're saying from the number, meaning UConn ain't even got off yet. It sounds like you said they got 8 offensive rebounds.
Yep.
And it sounds like you said they got, which were 7 points, and it sounds like you said they got 11 points off turnovers.
Yes.
And so it's like, at some point, the offense is going to kick in. And you would think that it was, but I'm going to stay confident, you know, with Memphis. I think Penny has them well prepared today, so early in the morning. And you know what? I think it's one of them things where the University of Memphis, with it not being a lot of drama at the moment, with it not being,
which was a welcome change, by the way.
Yeah. No drama, no prima donna. I have also been a part of teams. I don't know, Jeff, because me and you wasn't talking as much then, but we played the number one player in the country, A.J. Dubai, here in Memphis, and the whole city came out. And when I said on paper, it looked like we was a 20-30-point loss, and we ended up losing by 1 at the end and was leading it. I think Penny and Chen checked them, man checked these guys, and they saying, we know we the underdogs, we know no one giving us a chance, and we want to go out here and shock the world. And as we were saying before your last statement, I think this will be the biggest win in his career. I think the second biggest win, the first best win, was when he beat Houston. I think that's even bigger than
I was trying to think. So the other ones, I know it wound up not being a great Tennessee team, But when they went to Knoxville,
that was big.
And remember, like they were, I think they'd won 9 straight at that point, and they'd gotten into the top 10 or maybe the top 15. But winning in Knoxville,
that was big.
Because at the time we thought, all right, they went and won without James. James is coming back. The suspension's going to be over here soon. And it was almost like off to the races. And obviously that season played out, and that Tennessee team was not one of Barnes' best teams. But just in terms of that day, I thought that one felt big.
That was big. That was big. Houston, the one or two times we beat Houston, and one, them was big, and this would be the biggest.
What about the Houston win to win the AAC title?
Yes, big. Houston was, every time they beat Houston, Houston was like in the top 5 or 10 in the country.
I was trying to think if, so one time, I can't remember if Houston came in one.
Yeah. I don't know if we won that time. Did we win when it was one? I thought we won when it was like top 5.
All right, so I'm trying to look in Basketball Reference, and usually they'll have the mark of the game. Okay, so obviously, was that 23 we got to go back to? Okay, so they had the neutral, so two full seasons ago, neutral site win over Auburn in Atlanta in that State Farm. I feel like that was right around Thanksgiving as well.
So was.
That, I felt like that was a good one. Houston came in. So they played Houston as the number 2 team and lost by 8 at the Fertitta Center. And then they lost the buzzer beater. That was when they came in number 1.
Oh, yeah.
But I believe that was the season they got them. Yeah, then they got him in the tournament. So that was, I think they technically knocked off the number 1 Houston in the tournament. So I think that one you got to put up there.
They were still number 1 right when the tournament.
But I also think there's kind of a weird, how do you categorize conference tournament versus regular season? Bama was 6th when they beat them in FedEx Forum.
Bama was
3 years ago, yes.
Because they almost, the year at Auburn, they played Bama some of the next game, and they lost, though, when Bama was top.
Correct.
Yeah, by a few points.
Yeah, it was like one of those 8-point games that wound up being like 3, but it was they won at Houston when Houston was 6th.
That's big.
And then that's the year they beat Houston twice in the same season. That was when they kind of punked them on the last game of the year, and that's the year where they beat Boise in the tournament and then lost to Gonzaga with the halftime lead. I'm looking for other ranked regular season wins.
And everything you're saying is...
So Tennessee was 19 when they beat them in Knoxville. They beat Houston, who was 22 at the time. I think it's fair to say this. This is, if they could pull this off, this would be the biggest regular season win of his career.
For sure. For sure. And even I'm going to say this, too, because some people looking at it from a fan standpoint, when you're talking about just pure, as bad as people think last year ended, it was a stretch when you're talking about just from a pure coaching and preparation point. When Penny beat Virginia by 20-some,
yeah,
y'all don't understand how prepared and structured a Tony Bennett team is or whatever. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's just, Duke and North Carolina didn't even do that year, so it ain't like it was they could be not ranked. And when they beat them by 20, and I think it was somebody else, a high major before or after.
So there was that was the stretch of the Clemson win.
Yeah. Clemson was ranked top 25,
and they went to A&M and punked them.
Yeah, and that A&M team made it to the tournament last year, started winning towards the end in the SEC. So we. That's what's so crazy, that last year team, because I think they had gotten to top 15 or 10 in the country or something, and they just went haywire, and I hate it for them because they
In terms of AP poll, in the middle of January, they were ranked 10th.
Yeah, they had that stretch.
Yeah.
So they didn't have some good wins, but like I said, I think this one be up. And I want to say this too, Jeffrey, because I'm good friends with Rick Barnes and a lot of people. That game – when Penny and them beat those guys, and just because of, I feel like, the friction between coaches, me being from Tennessee, and I'm going to even tell Coach Barnes just went in, I shouldn't, maybe I shouldn't say this publicly.
That's all right.
Here now, he's not from Tennessee. Whatever, riffraff, we do as coaches, we can't take the game away from the state. We can't do that. Rick Penny and them, they're from here. We got kids that played together, to go against it. That game mean a lot to this state, and I get it. You know, Rick Barnes is a Hall of Fame, so he don't play all that being tested or disrespect, but we in Tennessee. That's a game that means something to people who grew up in Tennessee.
Could not agree more.
And I'm going to tell Coach when I see him, I didn't want to talk to him over the phone. We go bump and see each other or whatever. But, yeah, we got to bring that back. And then when Penny won, and I think they say our players, was, you know, after the little stuff that happened at the Forum that year when they won and they felt the players was big. But whatever it is, we got to get that back together.
No, I'm completely with you. As we turn college sports more into this TV television product, I think we're getting away from the heart of, like, what really matters about this stuff. And it's like, man, it's playing the teams around your region. And it would be one thing if that Tennessee game that we're talking about, 12,000 people would have showed up. That was a sellout crowd in Thompson Bowling Arena. This is a sellout crowd here. Like, Arkansas, Cal, you need to play them. Like, it's where I do give Ole Miss and Mississippi State credit. Maybe they won't give them the football game, but they'll play them in the basketball game.
Yeah. But, you know, at one point, it was benefiting other way around before NIL. It was beneficial. Matter of fact, Ole Miss, when they played Memphis in football, how long ago has that been?
So the last time they played, I believe, was 2019.
So in 2019, when they played, the coach there at the time was, AK was still a coach. And when I was talking
You mean hoops? They're still playing. They played that.
No,
last.
I said when was last football.
The last football was 2019.
So when they did it, the coach there was Andy Kendi, and I remember Tony Matlock, the reason I remember it. I think that was Ole Miss had told Memphis, the only way that we're going to play this game is you got to do the basketball.
Yes.
Because I remember us talking about.
Well, so that was originally kind of the deal. And so this is where you do kind of have to tip your cap to Tiger football. It used to be most of the SEC teams would want the Memphis basketball game, and obviously Memphis would want the football game as long as there'd be a return trip because, hey, man, that was a game where you could darn near sell the place out. But then when that was when a day and age when you really that concerned about losing to Tiger football. But I do know for a fact when in 2015 when Ole Miss lost at the Liberty Bowl the day that Paxton was awesome, Kim Dichie ends up getting hurt, and they lose like a, I think they're ranked 15th at the time. Freeze was like irate, saying like, cancel the series, we're never playing him again, whatnot, because he was trying to come out and embarrass him because he still held some weird grudge about not getting the women's basketball job 20-something years ago. And so he was running like double reverse passes. He was trying to embarrass him, and then he got popped. And so what happens when someone like that gets embarrassed? Like, they freak out. For the most part, though, both Ole Miss and Mississippi State have been good about playing the basketball game. But there is, to a certain degree, like, that's, they kind of need the game a little bit more. But really what has happened is Tennessee was willing to do the series, like, all right, we'll play the football game because we're not really that worried about it, but we're getting the basketball game in return. And it's kind of been, with Tiger football now getting better, teams don't really want to play. Like, you don't want to have the loss that gets held against you. But I'm with you entirely. Like, these series need to come back. We need more of the regional rivalries, and they need to be home and homes. They don't need to be play the game in Nashville, play the game in Little Rock. Play one game, play one in Oxford, play one in here, play one in Starkville, play one at FedEx Forum, play one at Bud Walton, play one at Thompson Bowling. Like, they just needs to be campus series. And, like, those are games that everybody would care about.
No, for sure. And I want to say this again, even outside of the series, the Tennessee and Memphis, I don't care if that one of them was in the Pac-12 and the other one was in the Conference USA, that's just a state game. Because no disrespect, and I mess with Stackhouse, and I even supposed to be going to Vanderbilt practice in December, because it got to be Memphis, Tennessee. When they did the rotation with Vandy and all that, that's cool. But in Vandy came, and Stackhouse.
Heck, I don't care. Put the Belmont game. Belmont's a good program.
Yeah.
Play them all.
Yeah. Kind of like Indiana do. Indiana do this classic where it's Butler, Indiana, think Notre Dame, and one more school, and they rotate them every year, and it's a big classic where all four of them.
And they all play at Conseco?
I think so. They're playing some part, and it's during Christmas. I can look it up when we get off air. It's Butler, I can't think of the four of them. Butler, Indiana, Notre Dame. What other big school is in Indiana?
There's Purdue.
Purdue. That's it.
And they all rotate.
They rotate. I just don't think Purdue and Indiana ever play because they're in the big
right. They play. So they're going to play twice during the season.
Yeah, yeah, they don't.
But like that's fine. But like I want the on campus games. And I know FedEx Forum's not an on campus arena, but it's your home arena. Like when they had the Memphis Tennessee game, like that was awesome. Like to me, like we have so few big games anymore, and it's only going to get worse with the conference. Like, give us the big games. And I think that was, I'm kind of curious to know what you feel like this. So we've gone to the half, it's 40-40. Before we get to the break, though, because when you're talking about last year, I think there's two possibilities, and I'm curious to know what you think. Do you think that was a good team that collapsed, or that was a team that wasn't as good as its record, and eventually they got?
I think it was a good team. I think it was a good team and a well-coached team and a bonding team early on because I don't think they were sorry and then it caught up because they beat better teams than they lost to. If it was the other way around, like where they started off in conference and then lost to the big, you get what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. I thought it was a good team that collapsed. And I think there are probably several reasons. I think there was probably... And you got it, you understood it, but there was probably too much emphasis on our season is the non-conference season because those were your opportunities. But then I think what that led to was the not taking the regular season of conference play seriously, and that's the opportunities of you lose a couple of those games and there's such bombs on your resume that it's tough to overcome. And then I think you got into the situation where all right, things started to spiral against them, and they weren't cohesive enough to get it back on track.
No, I agree, and I want to add to this, Jeff, kind of being lit inside there, kind of just being, and Jeff, I say being a coach, but you and your family have been coaching forever, so you know what time it is when I say this. It is some guys on this team, this is where I think they did do a good job at. As good as the team was, as well as they was well coached, they had a couple key pieces and a couple positions that you can't have it at. They had some mental weakness that broke
at the wrong
time.
But I think that goes to the collapse.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you got some Charmin soft guys. And I mean, I know this wasn't popular to say it real time, but I always had this belief of David Jones was a great scorer, mm-hmm. and I'm not taking away anything that he accomplished on a basketball floor. He's accomplished way more than I could even dream of accomplishing on an athletic floor. I'm still not convinced that was a winning basketball player because everywhere he went, he put up unbelievable numbers. He was a great scorer on really bad losing teams.
Yeah,
and honestly, I kind of had some concerns about, okay, is that what Haggerty is? But I think there's a clear difference between Haggerty and David Jones, and even though maybe David's a better pure scorer, like I still think Haggerty was just caught on really bad teams. But I think he makes winning basketball plays.
No. And so what you said, and I don't even want to name the names, but I think David was not the biggest issue. It was a couple guys.
No, it was the point guard that called out by his old coach. It started there.
It was a couple guys.
And in fairness, Nate Oates did tell us before the season, it's nice to have a point guard that wants to play basketball every day.
Yeah. And I also, up Northeast, though, Jay Wright, Villanova, some old people said some little stuff. I don't know if people knew it was about him or whatever, but.
I also think, though, I think Quinterly was kind of in a tough spot. I always got the sense that Quinterly played basketball because he was good at it. I'm not sure, like, Quinterly, like, eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just
think he was good at it.
I agree. It's a couple guys that could handle the ball more, and they were mentally weak, I feel like, far as with, you know, just pressure, accountability. Then you had the other kid that was kind of the heart and soul of guards. He might not have been as cold as them. He gets hurt.
Yeah.
That's another thing. He gets hurt at that time. So I know when people say they don't take it serious, and my thing too, Coach, I know this don't – money can't change your heart. Money can't change your character, but – a couple of those guys who got mentally weak and a couple of those guys that people think was too hard on, and I'm not saying this from a jealous thing. I'm saying this from a fan. Jeff, they were staying at 3-bedroom condos downtown that grown men can't go to and getting paid handsomely. Like, you got to do your job.
No, and where I give him credit this year, I think that's going to be a problem in the NIL era is, okay, all these guys are in the portal, and you've got to do a good job of, it's honestly, it's like scouting for the NBA draft. It's more than just, does this guy have the ability to play? It's, well, what's he like off the floor? How bought in is he? And to me, it's like, I think they kind of did a very good job of maybe when you're keeping up with recruiting or keeping up with portal recruiting, you're not as overwhelmed and maybe it's not as flashy, but I do think they got much better fits for what they want to do.
No, they did. And I'm going to say this, and this might not be popular or unpopular. David Jones should be on this year's team, and David Jones with this year's team, I think is unbelievable. When I say unbelievable, not like UConn top five unbelievable, but it's a top 25 team.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it's played out.
And it ain't like we got a million scores that would have got in his way. I think him and the other kid from Tulsa would have fit really good together, and they would have been, you know, Jordan and people would deal what they did, but I think it would have been awesome him coming back, and I know we probably could have paid more in NIL than
maybe.
Than
I guess the only thing I'd push back though is, does that start giving too many mouths to feed? Because one thing I actually like about this team, and maybe we'll find out, like there's no question this team doesn't have the depth, and maybe you have one or two injuries, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, we could have really used someone else. The thing that I like about this team is that there's clearly a pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like part of the problems last year stemmed from, it felt like at times, and you've seen this when you go to showcases and whatnot, and you kind of have to, all right, here's 5 minutes for this guy to get his, you know, to get his shine, and here's 5 minutes for this guy to get his shine. Versus with this team, it's like you can just play as a basketball team. It's not, it doesn't feel like you're taking turns anymore.
No, I agree. I just think that, like you say, with this team being more bought in and mentally tough, I think that David would have just made it easier to score. We wouldn't have had the first halves that we have. He would have definitely made it easier to score. Let me ask you this from the Malu too, Jeff. It feel like when we was watching it earlier, or maybe I'm just off, that even though it would go to – have it always been like that, even though it would go to timeout, the scores were changing? Like,
no, I got thrown off. They went to break. I think some of the graphics have been wrong. Because we went to break, and I thought it was 27-24, and then they come back, and it was 24-24.
But then it felt like another time it wouldn't break. It was on commercial, but like it was like they had must have played before it came back on. Like the score.
I've noticed, and again, maybe this is our cable feed, but maybe what I have noticed is there are times where it goes black for 3 seconds. So maybe there's some transmission stuff.
Oh.
Maybe the truck's having some problems in Maui.
Yeah.
Like the actual production.
Maybe Netflix is trying to take over, but they're
exactly.
not ready.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe. Maybe they better get it together. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, it is tied at the half. We got some second half coming up from Maui. UConn and Memphis tied at 40, but we want to get into a few other things from the weekend. Of course, we'll react live in real time to this game that is going on, but we'll do all of that next when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Yes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's never too early to start thinking about the big game. And all month long, Zen Sports, the newest sports book in Tennessee, has launched a brand new sweepstakes for all Tennessee customers. It's the Big Game Sweepstakes, where you could win a grand prize of two tickets to go see Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. It's VIP tickets, tailgates, parties, and hotel stay in New Orleans. It's valued nearly at $22,000, or you can win $10,000 cash. Also, Zen Sports is awarding an additional 50 prizes, which include two tickets to any sporting event in Tennessee, or $100 cash. If you want in on the action, all you have to do is you can earn multiple entries every day by just betting on the Zen Sports app. For every bet you place, you will earn one entry, and for every dollar you bet, earn an additional entry. And if you like parlays, you can earn double the entries on every parlay placed. So what are you waiting for? Sign up today for Zen Sports, and our listeners can use the referral code JeffTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, and you'll receive an additional 25% odds boost when you sign up with promo code JeffTN. So make sure you sign up today. Go download the app. It's the Zen Sports app. You can download it in all of the app stores. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. The Tigers currently leading 44-43 over UConn. So we're about 3.5 minutes into the second half. So we'll keep you up to date. We'll really focus on that pretty much during hour number two on kind of our overall reactions. But so far, I think the key takeaway is Memphis plays their best first half of the season. I don't even really think that's debatable. Best first half of the season. And so far, they appear to just be game right now. Like, this second half is not, it's not like, oh, this is getting away from them now that UConn came back from the half and they got some guys that were back from foul trouble. Like, to me, this is kind of the key thing is that now, how about this? UConn hasn't, they scored on their first possession of the second half, and they haven't scored since. So that's a scoring drought of over 3.5 minutes. So Tiger defense, keeping it real.
No, like you said, this is definitely major, Jeff. What is almost 5 minutes in the second half, and you would have expected after the chewing that you know their coach gave them for them to come out and just dominate. And Memphis is like, listen. We don't care what your coach just said. We are here right now. We are here to play ball, and I'm excited for it. I'm just excited for a competitive game.
Yeah.
Know both coaches very well, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I would want the hometown to get this one done. You know, sometimes when I say that, though, because I'm cool with so many other coaches, like, hey, what you doing? No, I'm just being real. This would be really big for our city right now. No disrespect to UConn because I love the job he done, but – even if y'all win the championship this year, I just want Memphis to win this game. You know what I'm saying?
You're kind of in the – Jimmy Sexton used to always say this when it, because he has all the coaches as an agent. It's like when they ask him who you're rooting for, it's like usually it's whoever needs the win more. And Penny kind of needs this win.
Yeah.
Dan Hurley will be okay without a win.
Yeah, he'll be okay. Now, his players won't. That next practice, boy, when they get from Thanksgiving, they're going to throw all that up if they lose. Dan Hurley is going to come with it. But, man, Memphis look good, Jeff, and I think – like you say, non-debatable, this is the best first half. The first 5 minutes have still been really, really good. And it's just one of them things. If Memphis don't break, man, they're going to have a chance. If they don't have a 3-4-5, because I will tell you this about basketball.
That stretch where you don't play well.
Yeah, if you have three, and it can happen as quick as 3-4 possessions.
Sure.
Like, boom, you turn it over, lay up, then next thing you know, a three, or 3, or N1, and it's, you know what I mean?
I mean, we saw this in the tournament last year. Like, I remember UConn would have like 29-1 runs. And like that's how quickly it would start. Now, I don't suspect that's what's going to happen right now, but you do realize like, okay, that's very much on the table when you're playing an opponent like this. But so far, I've been nothing but impressed with the Tigers. Like this to me is when you're watching the game, you go, this is two pretty even teams.
Oh, yeah. If you don't know Like, if you take the names out the jersey.
Right, if you're just watching, if you're just
you don't know
just
the ranking
in,
of the yeah. transfers. And the, yeah, 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 you'll be like, yeah, yeah, these two
yeah.
even teams for sure. And more kudos. The good thing about this game is, outside of us always putting pressure on Memphis, Memphis should be playing the most freely. I feel like they, with this one, the free situation, like,
free
they
shot.
Only have
totally agree.
Everything in the game. It's almost like a quarterback seeing somebody and jumped off sides and he still gets the ball. You know, and I feel like in any other way, you know, now, even with that said, you know, I see stuff on Twitter from Memphis fans. I see I'm not on Facebook much, the sports group, and they still tried to make it seem like it. I'm like, nothing can be wrong if you're playing the number one team. And I mean, we're playing with house money right now.
There's nothing wrong with free shots. I'm with you entirely. All right, let's talk about the weekend that was. So I think let's start first with college football, because we had talked on Friday with Tim Murray of what was the mood of this weekend going to be. And Tim made the hypothesis of, okay, what if we see a weekend where teams are going to have a newfound pressure that we've never seen, which is, all right, if you just win out, you're in the playoffs. But just winning out became a different level of pressure. And I think what we started to see this whole weekend is this could be maybe something to watch in Novembers to come in this version of the playoffs. Because normally when we get to this part of the calendar, we're talking about, I don't know, six teams that can realistically make a four-team playoff. And what we saw this week was you had number five, number seven, number nine. Even Penn State had to struggle in a all-out war on a road game against Minnesota. But we saw a lot of the teams that kind of had the pressure of, all right, if we keep winning, we're in. And I think I put Indiana in a little bit different category, because I think what happened to Indiana was the way the schedule broke out for them, like, he just hadn't really been tested. And that doesn't mean that those games didn't count, but we saw there was a very different animal. And the same thing applied, honestly, to Army. Like, when Army went up against Notre Dame, the only team in the country that had a worse schedule than Army was Liberty. And I kind of set them to the side, because I think those two teams in particular, they were physically mismatched against a better opponent. And so I'm kind of setting them aside. But I think the key thing with, in particular, Ole Miss and Alabama, I mean, I guess you could at least say with Ole Miss, like, they were in the game more than Alabama was, because that was kind of the other thing that stood out about the Alabama game. It's like, they scored 3 points. And at least with Ole Miss, it was like, well, they did have the ball with a chance to tie, and they had multiple opportunities to put that game away. But I really think what we saw this weekend was teams that had playoff pressure and they weren't for sure in. I think we started to see some people feeling it and feeling the intensity of the moment.
No, I agree, Jeff.
Texas A&M got into the same thing. They fell behind early, then they took control, but then the game, they had a chance to put the game away, couldn't do it, and the game gets to overtime.
And that's all she wrote from there.
Yeah.
I feel like the pressure, well, first of all, after the weekend, Jeff, you know what I'm seeing people say now? They're saying, or as great as the SEC is, they're saying Oregon, Ohio State, and it's a gap. I've seen a few people put this on Twitter, Oregon, Ohio, and then it's a gap, and then it's this tier after this weekend. Now, I don't know if that's fair to do after a weekend, but that's how some people are putting it now, like Oregon, Ohio State, then it's a gap.
I think it depends on what you believe about Georgia. Because the way I kind of feel about it is, I know Georgia didn't exactly give away the most dominant performance against UMass, but I still think Georgia's best deserves to be in that category. The difference between Ohio State, Oregon, and Georgia is that Oregon and Ohio State have not had as many clunkers as Georgia has, but I think if Georgia plays like they did against Tennessee, that team deserves to be in the category. And it was almost like, I was talking about this with Blake Topmeyer when we were kind of reacting to Saturday night. In a weird way, we still have more football to play, but kind of where we've gotten was almost where we thought we were going to be when the season started, which is Ohio State and Georgia and maybe Oregon were going to be clearly the best rosters. And then in the SEC, it was like Georgia and Texas are the two best teams. Those are the teams that we're likely to see in the SEC title game. Again, we have a full weekend left of more games, but that's kind of how it sorted itself out. And it's like we took this dramatic, circuitous route, but we're kind of back there. Now, the fault there is, okay, Texas has got a tough rivalry game against Texas A&M, and it's on the road. And, you know, now you're in this situation where Ohio State's got a game against Michigan where I don't think they've been this big of a favorite in like 3 decades. And so is Michigan good enough to play spoiler? Michigan offensively, it's Northwestern granted, but they put up 50 points last week and Michigan has been playing better the last month. It's like, are we going to see other teams that we don't think of? Because I don't know, like when we got to the weekend, I thought it was possible that Ole Miss and Alabama could lose, but I didn't really think it was going to play out the way that they did, because the thing that stood out to me, particularly with Ole Miss's game, is it wasn't like Florida came out and played the greatest game you've ever seen. It was largely Florida played their game like, we're going to let Ole Miss beat themselves. And Ole Miss had turnovers. They were bad in the red zone. And all of a sudden, you wind up in a game that comes down to one possession or two, and Florida gets ahead, and Ole Miss falls apart. With the Alabama-Oklahoma game, obviously the offensive turnovers that led directly to points had a massive impact, but it's like they just could not run the football, and then they got into a situation where Oklahoma knew they have to throw, and it was like, take away Williams and don't let him go off, and then make Alabama go down the field. And it's like Alabama just could not do that. They were just trying to hit shot play, shot play, shot play, and they couldn't do it. And to me, I am curious to see if we will see teams continue to feel pressure this weekend, because you would have thought when Ole Miss lost, because they said on the broadcast, I was thinking about it, and I was like, this kind of felt the way that it was to me. It's like they put the playoff predictor percentages up. It was like 84% to make the playoff with a win, 4% to make the playoff with a loss. Well, at 11 a.m. that day, or whatever, 2:30, when they end up losing, you're like, no, that should have been 100% chance if you win to make the playoff, 0% chance to make the playoff if you lose. But we saw enough other teams, and we saw enough chaos on Saturday that I'm not sure that Alabama and Ole Miss are completely eliminated from this. They need help, but if we just see another weekend like we saw this weekend, which is some double-digit upsets, I kind of think they're right back in it. But do I expect that to happen? No, but like I think so many teams lost that you could still, basically, you need about 2 results to flip. Like you'd need probably USC to beat Notre Dame. I think you need Texas A&M to beat Texas. You probably need either Auburn to beat Alabama, and you probably need one of these. I think you probably need South Carolina to beat Clemson so that you don't leave the Clemson door open, and then you can wind up in a situation where, all right, I think they could be back in it. I'm not defending it. I'm not saying that like that's great, but at a certain point, you might wind up being in an NCAA tournament situation where sometimes you got to put 68 teams in. And we might be in a situation where sometimes you got to put 12 teams in, and separating these teams could be difficult. And I just don't think they're entirely eliminated given all the chaos that we saw.
Yeah, it was definitely a historic weekend of college football.
So number 5 loses 38-15. That was Indiana. Mm-hmm. Number 7, Alabama loses. This is in the college football playoff rankings, by the way. Number 7 loses 24-3. Miami handles Wake. Ole Miss loses at Florida 24-17. Then you had Boise struggle with Wyoming. BYU loses at Arizona State. That's 14. 15 was Texas A&M. They lose at Auburn in overtime. 16, Colorado loses 37-21 to Kansas. And then Army loses. And so now you're kind of like filtering out. It's like, okay, these were losses, but a lot of the teams behind you that had the chance to jump up and take a spot a lot of those teams lost too. And so, yeah, you will no longer control your own destiny, but I still don't think what we've seen this year is that the middle of the pack is capable of beating the top of the sport at a higher rate than we typically see. And so that's why I just don't think it's done yet.
Yeah, especially in the SEC. And so it's a chance that Texas and Georgia can play for the...
Correct. So if Texas... Georgia is in the SEC championship game because they finished conference play.
Georgia, is they still with the new stuff? They still SEC East?
So there are no divisions anymore.
Oh, okay.
So they're taking the top two teams. So Georgia has clinched a spot. If Texas wins, Texas is in. And I believe based on the losses, I think we've now gotten to the point where the winner of Texas A&M is in.